Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. One moment in their lives brought Ray and Janae Rice into the public eye. A video showing Ray Rice knock his then-fiancée unconscious and drag her outside of an elevator in Atlantic City. After appealing his suspension from the NFL, Ray Rice can now be signed as a free agent. And he and his wife Janae are speaking out about what happened in that elevator and their lives since then. This hour on Point, Ray and Janae Rice, the NFL, and domestic violence in America. You can join us on air or online. Have you heard Janae Rice speak out? Have you heard Ray Rice? Should he get another chance? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Bristol, Connecticut, is Jemele Hill. She is the co-host of the ESPN2 show His and Hers and columnist for ESPN.com. She spoke with Janae Rice earlier this month. The piece titled Janae Rice in Her Own Words is on ESPN.com, and you can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Jemele Hill, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, it's nice to have you. You just spent quite some time speaking with Janae Rice. Tell us about that interview a little bit.
Well, it was about 3 hours. It took place, as you said, in early November. And, you know, I had about 3 pages worth of questions that were asked. She didn't shy away from anything. She answered every question. And the point, I think, for her to do a piece like this and in this format was to be able to tell her own story, because in her mind for the last several months, we've opined, we've dissected, we've psychoanalyzed who she is, who she's married to, why she's in this marriage. And so she truly tried to take this as an opportunity to be transparent and also to, from her perspective, give people a broader and more complete story.
So she's really come to Ray Rice's defense. I'm just curious, did you believe her?
Well, I guess I look at it this way. I'm in the journal. I'm a journalist by trade, and believability of a subject is kind of a tenuous thing. In a lot of ways, it really doesn't matter if I do or if I don't. I mean, these are her words, and this is her story. And obviously, part of the reason you become a journalist is you practice a degree of skepticism. I'm not saying I don't believe her. I'm just saying that I think that at this point, all we have to go by is by her words, and there's no evidence to dispute what she's saying, that Ray Rice has never hit her before. This is the only time they've been engaged in any kind of physical conflict. And those are the facts. And that's what I'm going by right now.
Let's hear from her. This week, NBC's Today Show aired an interview by Matt Lauer with Janae Rice and her mother, Candy Palmer, at the Rice home in Baltimore. He asked them about the tape that was released of the incident in the casino elevator in February, which shows Janae's husband, Ray Rice, knocking her unconscious.
Have you seen the second tape?
No. I refuse. I'm not going to let the public bring me back there.
Mm-mm. Mom, you've seen it?
Of course. I didn't want to see it at first, and it took me a while, but I did because I had to. That's my child, and if something happened to her, I don't care what it is. I want to see it.
Jemele Hill, in your conversation with Janae Rice, what did she say about that night, about what happened in the elevator?
She said she told practically the same account that she did tell me she did not see the second video. She said that they had never, that Ray Rice had never hit her, that he never spit on her before, that she had never hit him, that this was something that was truly a huge anomaly in the history of their relationship. She said that they were arguing. They were with another or several other couples since it was Valentine's Day. They were celebrating. They had a lot to drink. And she can't quite remember what they were bickering about. Neither could anyone else in their group. But as she termed it, it was, quote, insignificant. And at some point, She became really irritated with him because he was on his phone, and when she went to reach for his phone because he was ignoring her, he spit on her, and then she slapped him and followed him into the elevator. And for her, after that, things get a little unclear, clearly based off the alcohol and the fact that she was knocked unconscious in the elevator. And so when she sort of came to, she was surrounded by police in the casino, and they described to her what had happened, of which initially she did not believe until the police told her that they had the entire encounter on video.
So she said this was a huge anomaly, this incident. It was insignificant. I'm just curious how much you think Janae was protecting Ray Rice during this conversation you had with her, perhaps with the hope of getting him reinstated to the NFL. How much of this was just was very genuine?
Well, I think she came off genuine throughout the interview, but she can be genuine, and yet there's still an agenda behind the conversation at the same time. Those aren't necessarily, those don't have to be mutually exclusive. I mean, the fact of the matter is, at some point, her and they as a couple would have to face and answer a lot of these questions, especially considering it's obvious that his goal is to play again in the National Football League. So, and I think it's natural in some respects for her to protect him. I mean, this is somebody that she's known since she was 14 years old. They met as teenagers in high school. They're from the same community. And they've had a relationship now for 7 years.
Yep, yep.
They have a 2-year-old child together. And again, taking her at her words, if she's saying that this is was a one-time thing, and that it had never escalated to this point before. And I even asked her if they had even had arguments where she thought that physical violence would occur. And she said, no, it's never been anything like this, their interaction, their relationship.
Well, we'll hear more from Janae in this hour. Let me bring another voice into this conversation now from Washington, David Steele. He's an NFL columnist for SportingNews.com and former longtime sports columnist for the Baltimore Sun, home paper of the Ravens. David Steele, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks very much for having me, Jane.
So Ray Rice has been reinstated by the NFL. He's eligible to play. Tell us exactly what that means.
It means that his indefinite suspension handed down by the NFL and Roger Goodell on the day that the second video came out has been lifted, and now he's free to sign with any team in the NFL immediately. The questions that now follow are, is any team interested in signing him now? And if not, is any team going to be interested in signing him next year? Because the NFL can't do anything about what has been done or what's been undone with the decision on the suspension. So now teams have to decide, you know, what his worth is as a football player for them, and what sort of consequences there may be from signing a player who is so toxic in the minds of so many people, and will probably be a pretty strong reaction from any fan base or group of any city that would be interested in signing him.
Here is Ray Rice speaking to NBC's Today Show. Here he is talking about why he was wrong not to apologize to his wife, Janae, during the May press conference.
And I made a horrendous mistake not apologizing to my wife. When we was going in, we were giving what to speak about. It wasn't truly coming from us, if you can understand. But I, you know, made that clear in my last time I was able to speak, that my wife is an angel. She can do no wrong. I take full responsibility for my actions.
What have you seen, David Steele, in the NFL's response to this and to domestic violence generally within the league?
Well, they've had a lot of damage to undo since this all started. And it all really started, obviously, in going back to their reaction and the Ravens' reaction when he was first arrested back in February. The process took an incredibly long time to spool out. The Ravens put on that press conference, which was received so negatively for so many good reasons by so many people. They handed down a very small, very inappropriate suspension in the beginning of 2 games, and did it very late in the process after a very questionable process of investigation. And then undid all of that when the second videotape came out, and it's really it's been downhill ever since. They've to their credit, they've reached out to the right people. They've tried to push the right buttons and bring in the right resources to fix this and try to put some sort of a new policy in place. But they've got a big mess to clean up because they have a long, long history, even predating Roger Goodell, in totally mishandling domestic violence cases, especially in comparison to the discipline they've handed out on other violations, including things like, you know, uniform violations, mm-hmm. what kind of socks you're wearing and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, history aside, how does Roger Goodell play into this, the NFL commissioner? What responsibility does he have, David Steele? Did he lose major credibility here? There's so much about him out there.
He may have lost all of his credibility, to be honest. And he's been fighting for the last 3 months now to try to get it back. Because back in September, I think we all remember the press conference he gave after being silent for so long after the original suspension. He couldn't answer a question that was asked of him about any details of what went on before the suspension, what went into the suspension, and what was going to follow from the suspension. And then he announced this this internal investigation that, again, is highly questionable in terms of its credibility, because the man who is in charge of it, the former head of the FBI, Robert Mueller, has ties to an NFL team and to the league. It's always a question of how much power should the commissioner wield? How is he yielding it? Who should be making these sort of decisions about the players themselves, and how much input should the players themselves have in it? Even right now, with the decision that was made, they had to the union who was representing Rice had to push for a neutral arbitrator, because the way it was set up, Goodell himself would hear the appeal of the suspension.
Mm. So beyond this case, I mean, this has been in the forefront here, but does the NFL, to your mind, have a domestic violence issue?
It does, because there's still players right now whose cases the NFL has to address. Greg Hardy, playing down in Carolina for the Panthers, has a trial coming up later this year, or rather beginning of next year. A player just with the 49ers just had charges dropped on him. And there are all sorts of still continued cases where you don't know if players are really being disciplined for this the way they should be, and whether the scales really balance in terms of the way the league is disciplining players for different punishments.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about football player Ray Rice and his wife, Janae Rice, who are speaking out about domestic violence. And you can join the conversation. Have you lived this? What would you say to Janae Rice? Jamel Hill joins me this hour from Bristol, Connecticut. She's a writer for ESPN.com and co-host of the ESPN2 show His and Hers. She spoke with Janae Rice back in November, and that piece is titled Janae Rice in Her Own Words. Also with us from Washington is David Steele. He's an NFL columnist for SportingNews.com. So many listeners want to get in here. Let me go to Joe in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Hi, Joe. Thanks for calling. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Darren. How you doing?
Hi. Good. Go ahead.
Well, I'd like to say that I understand that they're scared they're going to lose their financial stability, but not in my right mind would I ever spit in my wife's face or physically hit her. And these people are role models that my kids and children all over the United States look up to. So if they see this and hear this, then they think that it's okay to hit their significant other or disrespect them in that way. There's no question that he should not ever play another day in NFL ever again. But who knows? The Jets will probably pick him up.
Mm. Joe, thank you. Here's Denise in Miami, Florida. Denise, welcome to the program. Hello.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I certainly don't condone violence, whether it's male on male, male on female, female on female. Certainly, Mr. Rice should be reinstated. They both acknowledged that this was wrong and totally unacceptable. We're standing in judgment. Unfortunately, that's commonly what we do. Again, don't condone this at all. The world has a domestic violence problem. Part of the problem, unfortunately, I think, is when we unintentionally support silence, we need to take a look at solving the problem. And in that, I'll make with this point, giving him another opportunity, they're being open, transparent. We should expect one to have redemption. And some of the problem is that we are providing those who are coming out, telling their story, telling their truth, judgment, which in essence, again, sometimes punish people who are willing to give us opportunities for lessons learned, mm-hmm. thereby unintentionally supporting people to not come forward and to remain silent.
Denise, I got it. Thank you. I really appreciate your call and your perspective. I want to play more sound here from Ray Rice. Here's an interview with Matt Lauer on NBC's Today Show saying what he thought it would take for the NFL to sign him.
They would have to be, you know, willing to, you know, look deeper into who I am and realize that, you know, me and my wife had one bad night and I took full responsibility for it. And one thing about my punishment and everything going along with anything that happened is that I've accepted it. I went fully forward with it. I never complained or I never did anything like that. I took full responsibility for everything that I did. And only thing I can hope for and wish for is a second chance.
David Steele, one bad night or a long-term PR problem associated with any team that picks him up?
It's hard to tell how long-term the PR problem is going to be, but in the moment and probably for a pretty long time to come, there's going to be a problem because this is not something that's just going to go away and disappear into the next news cycle. Because for one, the NFL is on stage 12 months a year now. There's still a lot of this season left, and even when the season is technically over and all the games are played after the Super Bowl, the NFL is always going to be in the news. And the moment any team shows any interest in Ray Rice, the entire cycle is going to start all over again. And in that sense, Ray Rice is right. Every team is going to have to decide how much of that they're willing to handle because it's going to be big. And they do have to think about whether or not, you know, can we trust him to not get involved in anything like that again, because he does have a positive past. And I got a chance to see it when he was in Baltimore. He was a huge he represented the area and the city and the team extremely well on and off the field and in things that he was involved with the community, including things like anti-bullying statutes. But he did do that, and that's no small thing. That it's nothing that can be minimized. And if he slips up and if anything else happens to him, the repercussions for him, for the team, and for the entire league are going to be enormous. And that might never go away. That could go on forever.
Mm. Jemele Hill, you spoke with Jhené Rice for a while. I'm curious what you think motivated her to speak out at this point.
Well, I think it was a combination of frustration, having not had an opportunity to really have a voice throughout all the conversation that's taken place around her. And also, I think it was partly motivated by this is just the process. We've seen whether it's athletes, celebrities, politicians, there comes a point where to fully resume their normal life, to fully kind of add some real normalcy, and for that matter, especially if there's a position to also keep in mind, and for them, the end goal is obviously that Ray Rice wants to play for another team. So in order to do that, part of this sort of path to contrition means answering serious questions about what happened and mm-hmm. explaining yourself. Mm-hmm. And so she, I think, just reached that point, given that they were already in the appeals process, so things were kind of winding down.
So I read the transcript of your interview, Jemele. I know that Jhené Rice said she wanted or needed editing rights to your interview. Did that make you uncomfortable in any way?
No, it didn't, because I will say this, the initial draft that she was presented, what was published is pretty close to what she initially saw. It was more of a collaboration. It was never a thing where she was saying she wanted this out or that out. And her and her team very much knew and understood that I take journalism very seriously. I also told them that, I didn't want to get into an awkward spot of during the interview playing the on-the-record, off-the-record game, and that never happened. As I said, she answered everything. Any editing that was done was merely primarily for brevity or conciseness, just normal editing things you would do. And those, that part of it was handled by our editors. And if she just wanted to add a few things to give it better context or explain better, and that was pretty much it. We never had any philosophical differences about what should and shouldn't be in the piece.
I know you have to run here, Jamel. What was your sense, last word here, of Janae and Ray Rice's relationship?
Well, from what she told me, she said they're in a really good place. This is the strongest their relationship has ever been, although clearly no one would wish the traumatic event that occurred on them. She was very clear about the fact that it's had some positive unintended consequences beyond their relationships. Their families have grown even closer together. She also has learned a lot about herself and her strength. So even though it was horrible and awful, I think there were some things she was able to gain perspective on.
Jamel Hill, co-host of ESPN2's show His and Hers and writer for ESPN.com. You can find her piece, Janae Rice, in her own words, on that website and our website as well. Jamel, thank you so much for being with us today.
And thank you for having me.
David Steele, stand by for a moment. Let me bring in Emily Rothman. She's with me here in the studio. She's a professor of community health sciences at the Boston University School of Public Health. She's worked and researched in the field of domestic violence for 20 years. Emily Rothman, welcome to UpPoint. Nice to have you.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
What are you hearing in this conversation?
Well, I'm hearing a lot of things. The question about whether or not the NFL should take him back is a really interesting one, and I found myself persuaded by your caller, Joe, who was saying, you know, this is a really bad example for kids. And because he is such a high status celebrity figure, it really sends a strong statement when you say this is not acceptable. There are no second chances. At the same time, you know, from a victim advocacy perspective, in this case, I want to look at Janae, what she wants to have happen, and respect where she wants to go with things, which seems to be I want to move forward and I want our lives to stabilize.
Let me play some sound here to that point. Here's more from the Today Show interview by Matt Lauer with Janae Rice and her mother, Candy Palmer, at their home in Baltimore. Lauer asked about violence in the Rice's relationship.
So let me just ask you directly and bluntly. Prior to what we have now seen in that elevator, was there ever any incident of violence in your relationship with Ray, or has there been any incident of violence since that elevator incident?
No. No. There's no way. He knows what he would have to deal with, you know, if this was something, you know, I'm not going to sit there in silence and let something happen to me and, you know, God forbid, in front of my child and just let it happen. There's no way.
Janae Rice said that Ray, quote, only hit her once. Emily Rothman, is that possible? Does that happen, one-time abuse?
Yeah, it's absolutely possible. There are plenty of couples where physical violence does happen only once. But I think there's a couple of other important things to think about here. So physical violence is in some ways only the tip of the iceberg. It's very rare to find a situation where a couple has physical assault going on and there aren't other coercive tactics of control going on, psychological abuse. And so in a way, that physical violence is just one symptom of something that's a larger problem that may really still be there.
Let's go to Adrian in Watertown, New York. Hi, Adrian. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. I was just saying that I really don't think he should ever get a second chance or anything, because I grew up in an abusive household with two different stepdads, both of them drugs, alcohol, constantly abusing everyone in the house. And I mean, the only reason my mom stuck around is because she was afraid that my stepdads would come after her and her kids. So, I mean, I really think the only reason Ray Rice's wife is sticking around is because she's afraid for her own life if she leaves that he's going to come after her.
Adrian, thank you. David Steele, what about the point of alcohol being involved in this incident? What do you make of the NFL and Roger Goodell partially looking at that issue, that part of this?
Well, that's not something they handle very well either, to be perfectly honest, because there, again, is inconsistent enforcement of rules in terms of punishment for players who get DUIs and DWIs. And they are right now bringing back a player with the Cowboys, Josh Brent, who spent time in jail for intoxicated manslaughter. from a couple of years ago when an accident that he was in killed one of his teammates. And the NFL's in most sports record on DUIs in terms of the percentage of people who are involved isn't really that much different from the general public's. But they face the same problem that they do with domestic violence and assault and sexual assault and all the other crimes, is that they just have a very inconsistent approach and attitude to these sort of things. So for that to become an issue now, it raises the question, well, when do you pick and choose when alcohol is an issue in anything that goes on with your players? And it just, again, goes back to the leadership. It's like, what exactly are you trying to do in terms of leadership, in terms of public image, in terms of both disciplining your players and coming to sort of an understanding on how these issues are going to be handled to the benefit of everybody, not just for their public image.
Emily Rothman, what did the statistics show? How many women experience some sort of abuse in this country?
Well, so the best data that we have, which is from a nationally representative sample, indicates that 1 in 3 women in the U.S., which translates to 36.2 million women, that's 1 in 3, have been slapped, pushed, or shoved by an intimate partner at some point in their lifetime. And at any given moment, about 3.6% of the U.S. population, or 4.3 million women, have experienced partner violence at least once during a year.
Is this a watershed moment, David Steele, for the NFL? I mean, hearing these statistics and seeing this case and that very dramatic video, I mean, you talk about an inconsistent approach and attitude, how the NFL has gone about this. Do you see change coming?
I think change is going to come. I'm not sure exactly what form it'll take or where it'll come from, because the thing we have to remember is that Roger Goodell is still at its foundation is employed by the owners, and the owners are the ones who are going to have to decide if Goodell is taking the league in the direction that he's in. And that's just sort of one of the weaknesses of the power structure with the league on these issues. But you know, there have been a lot of really hot button volatile issues that often revolve around player criminality. We remember several years ago Michael Vick with his dogfighting conviction.
Yeah.
You know, I've never seen in all these years an issue that has resonated with the public as strongly as this one, for better or for worse. And I think just the power of that and the way that so many people have weighed in on it and have shown that this is an issue that they're not going to let off and they're not going to let drift away, it just sort of tells you that this probably is a tipping point, that things are going to be a lot different. And the downside of that is that things could get a lot worse before they get better in terms of how the league handles it, how the public reacts to it, and how the players themselves handle it.
Let me go to Claire in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Claire. Glad you waited, and thanks for calling.
Hi, Jane. Thank you so much. I'm very concerned about this issue, too, and I think the solution might at least lie in changing the message about these perpetrators. They are not big men. They are bullies, and they're acting like little boys at the playground. They're hitting instead of acting like calm, mature adults and talking things through. And we need to change the message that they are acting like immature little boys or brats instead of big men. Because
Claire,
they are not big men.
Claire, thank you. Glad you called. Speak to this, Emily Rothman.
Yeah, I agree with Claire, absolutely. I think that one of the things that I heard Ray Rice say in the interview is, you know, Janae is an angel and she can do no wrong and my job is to protect her. All of these are part of this unrealistic idea of relationships. Nobody is an angel in a relationship. Conflict is inevitable. And making sure that people have skills to solve conflicts with respect and with equality is extremely important, which is why I think making sure we devote enough resources into prevention. So dating violence prevention in middle schools, in high schools, in colleges and communities is absolutely critical.
Is this typical, what you're hearing from Janae Rice and what you're hearing from Ray Rice, these lines, this conversation, the
yes.
content?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think there is often a huge pressure on victims, both internal and external, to try to, in a way, cover things over. I think if you've been victimized, you want to believe this person is sorry. It is never going to happen again. And it's important to, you know, they have a child together, that I think there are lovable, wonderful things about people who perpetrate hurtful and violent behaviors as well as those bad things, and it's very hard to disentangle that.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about domestic violence, the NFL, and Ray and Janae Rice this hour. You can join the conversation. What does the Ray Rice story tell us about domestic violence today? Here's more sound speaking with NBC Today Show's Matt Lauer. Ray Rice said that there was no prior violence in their relationship.
No relationship is perfect. We've had arguments. But when you talk about abuse, you know, that's something that, you know, we know that we've never crossed that path. But then, did we say things to each other that do we want to take back at times? Yeah, we crossed that line before, but it never got to an altercation where that went that far. You know, that was just very uncharacteristic of you know, myself. I'm never, like, I take responsibility. That was very uncharacteristic.
David Steele joins us this hour. He's an NFL columnist for SportingNews.com and former longtime columnist for the Ravens' hometown paper, the Baltimore Sun. Emily Rothman is with me in studio. She's a professor of community health sciences at the Boston University School of Public Health. And now I want to bring another voice in here. Joining me from Los Angeles is Sandy Banks. She's a columnist for the Los Angeles Times. Back in September, after the news about Ray Rice and Janae Rice came out, she spent time in court hearing domestic violence cases. She wrote it in her column called "It's Time to Turn Domestic Abuse Chatter into Conversation." You can find a link to that at our website, onpointradio.org. Sandy Banks, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you very much, Jane.
What are you hearing in the Rice story, and particularly in this conversation?
I'm hearing a troubling sense of denial on the part of Ray and Janae and her family. And I think, you know, as I think it was that Emily, you know, brought it up about, you know, that it's not just about violence. It's about control. It's about contempt. It's about all kind of issues. It's not about anger. It's not about being drunk. And when they talk about this as, you know, we have a good relationship, this was just one bad night, that just kind of reflects, and even Janae's refusal to watch the second tape, her insistence that she wouldn't sit there in silence if he did something to her, he knows this, when that's just what she did. It's almost like they're talking about a different incident than we witnessed on those videos. And her family's, you know, sitting there. I have three daughters, and I can't imagine sitting there calmly talking about something so horrific that happened to her and not, you know, wanting to actually spell it out and talk about it.
So what do you say to your daughters about this issue?
Well, I say to my daughters what I heard the judge in court saying to so many women, that, you know, one time is enough, that you don't, that there's no second chance unless you both commit to really changing things and acknowledge what happened and go into therapy. And I heard, right, you know, Ray talk about, you know, that he's been ripped apart in therapy and rediscovering himself. But nothing that he said demonstrated that he understands. I mean, he even talked about he's grateful that they've been able to shine a light on this for people who are actually going through it. They both said that. But it's not what we're going through.
So what do you think what do you think it projects then, Sandy, to young women about domestic violence, to young men, for that matter?
Well, I think it's a sense of confusion. It's a sense of not recognizing what domestic violence is. It makes me wonder if we shouldn't call it something else, you know, rather than domestic or even violence, because it has to do with abuse. It has to do with attitudes. And it has to do with your own self-esteem and your own sense of where you are in that relationship. And I think that's what, you know, I talk to my daughters about it, that you evaluate the entire relationship. It's not, you know, if something like this is going to happen, it's going to happen because there is some kind of imbalance in that relationship.
Fred is on the line from Los Angeles, California. Hi, Fred. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to call in because I was arrested for domestic violence 13 years ago, and I know that rehabilitation is possible. I've never, when I hear these stories about Ray Rice and I say it the first time, I don't believe that. The time that I was arrested for, that wasn't the first time. That was just the first time that I was caught by somebody other than the person that it was happening with. But I know over a period of time, and it's not going to be a short-term thing for Ray. It's going to be his whole lifetime. You know, I might be rehabilitated, I'm married. I have a 3-month-old daughter, but I will absolutely never forget what happened and how I felt and how I made other people feel 13 years ago.
Fred, thank you. I really appreciate your honesty and your call today. Emily Rothman, what are the causes of this?
So it's complicated, and for different people, there are different causes. But what we do know is that there are a number of things that, you know, can stem from childhood experiences, such as experiencing child abuse or witnessing interparental intimate partner violence. Insecure attachment in childhood is a factor. But then there are things like, as you grow older, associating with peers who think that using violence to solve problems is okay. People often ask about mental health, and it's true that antisocial personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, impulse control can increase the risk. But it's also true that hypermasculinity, or believing that violence is manly or that danger is exciting and women should be submissive, has been found to be associated with violence against women in multiple studies.
Let's go to Jake in West Palm Beach, Florida. Hi, Jake. Welcome to On Point.
Hi. Thank you.
Yes.
Should a person lose his profession for engaging in misconduct, even though it's abhorrent, that's unrelated to his job? And should the victim's desire for him to return to work be disregarded completely? And should we teach forgiveness and not apply it in a situation concerning him?
Jake, thank you. It's a good point. Sandy, does the celebrity standard, is it different, you know, when you're in the public eye, when something like this happens to you, when there's a tape, when you can see it right there, do we judge you differently?
I think we do, and I think we should, because it sends a big message about, you know, the rightness and wrongness of things and what morally what we're willing to tolerate. But, you know, I think that the last question he asked is really important. And your caller before who talked about him doing this and you know, being going through counseling and it being resolved, I wish more men would speak up. You know, we had the Why I Stayed, hashtag Why I Stayed, you know, campaign after this happened. But men who have been through this and who understand what they did wrong and who have repaired their relationships or repaired themselves, we need to hear from them. That's the element that's missing in this, because we're not going to get it from Ray Rice.
Emily, you were saying earlier that, you know, you don't ever have to lay a hand on the woman to be abusive in many ways.
Yeah, no, that's true. I worked in a shelter in Vermont some years ago, and I will never forget one of the clients that I had there was a woman who came to me and said that her husband had actually never hit her, never laid a hand on her. But on their wedding night, he'd been perfectly charming up to that point, but apparently on their wedding night, he pulls out a gun and he shows it to her and says, "I sleep with this under my pillow. If you ever try to leave me, I'm going to kill you." And she spent the next 40 years living in absolute mortal terror and had all kinds of health and mental health issues as a result. And so this is, you know, when people bring up this question of, well, wasn't, you know, he hit her once, you don't have to hit someone at all. In order for it to absolutely devastate that person's life, the child's life, and everyone in the community around them who's affected by it as well.
Sandy Banks, you spent many days in court hearing cases about domestic abuse. Talk about that a little bit.
Most of the women were shocked, as Janae seems to be, that this had happened to them. They were ashamed. They were embarrassed. Even when the judge questioned them, they were reluctant to say things. But I think that they all were at a point where they felt their lives were in danger and at risk. And, you know, one point the judge made to them was she congratulated them for coming forward and said, you know, the next time may have been the time that killed you. And that's, you know, it's an unpredictable phenomenon, and so we don't know what's happening. And I tell you, I heard after that column from police officers, female, college professors, business owners, housewives, so many women with a range of experiences that would fall in that category of domestic abuse. And they were all afraid.
Let me get Charles in here from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hi, Charles. Glad you called. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hi. Go ahead, Charles.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I just wanted to a few points, and it was clarified before I actually got online. And first of all, I want to say I don't condone violence, whether it's physical, mental, financial, psychological, or verbal. You could remember things from 20 years ago that someone told you in high school that you could remember today as if they told you yesterday, but yet you might not remember a fight that happened probably 10 years ago. So that means all of it hurt, all of it stings. But my point is, you know, what would you do in that case? We can stand in judgments many times, But these guys are trained to be gladiators on the field, and their goal is to get to the opponent each day, to go from violent 0 to 60 in 0 seconds. Yet at the same time, if you're talking about spitting somebody's face, slapping, and so forth, that person then doesn't develop into a teddy bear, so you might get that happening.
Charles, I'm so glad you called, and you hear this a lot. Thank you so much, Charles. Emily, you know, she slapped him, he spit on her. I mean, both sides hold some responsibility here. How do you reconcile that?
Well, I mean, the main thing that I take out of Charles' question and his call, which I really appreciate, is that we could be doing so much more to teach healthy relationship behaviors when people are young. It shouldn't get to this point, you know, but when people are first starting to date in adolescence and forming their relationship behavior styles, we know that there are programs that work and strategies that work that we could be putting into place in schools. Unfortunately, the funding isn't there, and we're not doing it to the extent that we wish that we could be. But an ounce of prevention really could be going a long way in these cases.
David Steele, NFL columnist for SportingNews.com, respond to the caller Charles, who made a very good point.
The fact that he used the word gladiator really jumped out at me, and this kind of cuts to the core of why a lot of people are bothered by not just the NFL but just the entire culture of football, period. Because a lot of fans have said that. Certainly, a lot of fans here in Baltimore who have been supportive of Ray Rice from the very beginning have said that he's a football player. This is what it takes to be in the NFL. This is the sort of personality you have to have. You can't turn it off and on. It's not like a light switch. People aren't accepting that as an excuse anymore. People are saying that if this is what the NFL requires of you, then we'd rather not have this at all. I would rather not watch the NFL or support a sport where you ask this of these players. And, you know, that brings into this all the other issues of, you know, the NFL's lack of concern about concussions, long-term care, physical pain, chronic pain, the punishment that they go through in order to entertain people week in and week out. And if this is a consequence of what people want as entertainment, is that, hey, occasionally they punch their wives or girlfriends out and maybe go to jail or maybe get suspended for a couple of games, then that's not worth the trade-off. So all of that is also bringing the culture of football and the culture of the NFL under tremendous scrutiny, and deservedly so.
I want to get this sound in here. Matt Lauer on the Today Show asking Janae Rice to respond to something that Robin Givens, the actress married to Mike Tyson before divorcing him, wrote after a particular incident of abuse.
Don't call me. I never want to see you again. But then you start taking his calls. Then he asks to see you in person, and you say yes to that. Then you have this big giant man crying like a baby on your lap, and the next thing you know, you're consoling him. You're the protector. One minute you're running from him, the next you're protecting him. Does any of that resonate with you, that you became Ray's protector by standing up and saying the things you did?
If anything, I was his protector before this. Protecting him from people with motives.
Emily Rothman.
Yeah, I mean, I think that women are raised to be, they're taught that they're supposed to be nurturing, that they're supposed to take care of other people. I know a lot of the women that I've worked with who've experienced domestic violence felt, you know, maybe I'm the one who can save him. He tells me that I'm special. I feel terrible for him in terms of his childhood. So maybe if I just love him enough and I'm patient enough, you know, I see the good in him and that can really come through. So I think that's a common narrative.
Here's Kevin in Austin, Texas. Hi, Kevin. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Yes, I believe I know in my mind that she knows what she's doing. What happened was wrong. You see it in her face, but that's her meal ticket. That's her lifestyle she's used to. And she leaves him, then her lifestyle will go down.
Kevin, thanks. Here's Eric in Northampton, Massachusetts. Eric, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a point that's kind of challenging. It's tough to even think about, really. But this argument is always framed in terms of men hitting women. And I wonder if, zooming out, and I'm not saying this is what happened in that elevator, but zooming out, are we creating a society where women aren't responsible for their own aggressive behavior? I've seen women punch and hit men, and, you know, the guy just has to kind of cover himself and say, oh, it's just a woman hitting me. But at what point do we say to females, just because we tell guys never, ever, ever hit a girl, at what point is it Are we absolved of their own physical aggression?
Got it. Thanks so much. Emily Rothman and Sandy Banks?
You know, it's never okay for anybody to assault anybody, male or female. Nobody should be spitting. Nobody should be slapping. There's no question about it. But it's important to look at the bigger context, especially when we're trying to solve this as a societal problem. I look at it as a public health problem. Females made up 70% of victims killed by an intimate partner in 2007. That proportion really hasn't changed over time at all. 72% of women report being fearful after they're being assaulted, as compared to only 18% of men. 42% of women sustain an injury. 13% of men sustain an injury. So you really have to take this issue in context.
Sandy Banks, close us out here. The societal, this public health problem, where do you see us going as a nation after the Ray Rice incident?
Well, I'm not sure. I think we have a real good opportunity here because it is so public and it has people talking about it. But I think we have to develop a deeper understanding about the kind of things that Emily's talked about, the bigger dimensions of the problem, before we can move forward. And people have to not just think about it as, you know, one bad night, as Ray Rice likes to call it.
And David Steele, what about the NFL?
I think the NFL has a lot of soul searching to do. I think it has to really overturn its culture from top to bottom, and it has to really commit itself not just to the words that it's been speaking the last few months about this issue, but really put it into action. You know, not just commercials, not just public service ads, not just a few hires here and there. They have to instill a new culture into their sport because the whole world is watching now.
David Steele, NFL columnist for SportingNews.com. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you very much.
Sandy Banks, columnist for the Los Angeles Times. Really appreciate your time today, Sandy. Thanks.
Thank you, Jane.
And Emily Rothman, professor of community health sciences at Boston University School of Public Health. Emily, really appreciate you being here with me.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, listeners. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.